Welcome to the Agile Revolution, Renee speaking. And today I've got my co-host, Craig.
Hey, hey Renee, how you doing?
And a special guest speaker, Gil Broza. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Long time listener, right?
Yes.
I was going to say long time reader, first time meeting.
Yes.
So we're at the conference today. You've already presented today.
Yes.
What did you present on?
Agile for non-software teams. And the angle is, what do our clients in that space need to go through to get Agile that's good for them, that's fit for purpose, that does what they hoped it would do, and that they can sustain? The people in my audience are coaches that get asked to help with that.
Mm-hmm.
So the angle was, well, what can you do to help those clients get where they want to go?
Is that because there's that... We've still got that legacy of people who mostly come from software teams that have grown up in that, the manifesto for agile software development?
Partly. I think what happens in areas outside of software is that they notice their colleagues in software and IT and prod dev, and they say, well, I want what they're having. And that's who they go to for help, other than Google, which doesn't help them much.
And what do you think they're seeing that makes them say, I want what they're having?
So oftentimes, they will see two things. One is a totally different team experience. So people sit closer to each other, they have those boards, endless stickies, and lots of meetings and talking and whatever, and this is noticeably different than the typical siloed approach level. The other, I'm assuming that it's a manager in that non-software part of the organization that's interested, and when the manager is talking to their peers, now there's discussion about potential benefits and what this helps do and helps avoid. And my hypothesis so far has been that those managers don't see their work as somehow deficient or broken, like we used to say that software was, right? Software delivery is broken, we need something else. They don't, but they're definitely interested in doing things better. And so they say, all right, so IT, usually IT, right? They're doing something different and they're getting different results. Maybe we could have some of that. They don't quite know what it could be. They call it agile. What they really need is sometimes agile, sometimes a hybrid, sometimes no agile at all. But that's the gateway drug. Yeah.
And so when you're thinking about non-software teams, I mean, I know that I've done a few of those types of implementations myself. So typically, like the sort of areas that I've worked in is like finance, HR. It's basically any knowledge work.
Right.
Which really requires a few steps for things to go through.
Mm-hmm.
But effectively teams working together to try and result in some sort of product or service outcome of some sort.
Exactly. And it's the same angle as in software. But there are distinctions. For instance, in software you will usually have one big team or several teams work on one big thing, which we think of as product and whatever, and we give it the life cycle and we know what we have there, whereas in some of the other functions, especially the regular support functions like finance and HR, they don't usually work on one big thing. They work on several mid-sized things and several smaller things and so on. They may not think of them as a product or a service, but that would be actually beneficial in many cases. So already they have the situation of Agile would apply to part of what we do, and we can also start in one part of what we do and take it up from there. Whereas in software development, you can't really do it for just one piece. Either your team does Agile or they do not. You can't say, all right, we'll just do it for one this little piece, I don't know, one feature. We'll work on it the Agile way. Everything else we'll do not. That doesn't fly. Whereas, for instance, in HR, you can say, let's say you're rolling out policy upgrades or salary updates. Yeah, or salary updates or code of conduct or something like that. You can approach that bit from an Agile standpoint. And if you like it and it works, now you can expand your use of Agile to other parts. So it's more gradual. Yeah.
And so what sort of common, I'm assuming you're going to say principles or practices?
I don't say practices, yeah.
Not true. I saw it in your slides for today. There was the word practices in there, in the toolkit.
Okay.
Artifacts, a few other things.
Oh, right in that diagram?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, okay. So that's there because that's what people normally talk about.
Ah.
And then I want to elevate the conversation to, why do we do those practices? Why do they look the way they do? What are we getting at? So I don't want people doing practices. Like, I don't care if people do daily stand-ups or not. I honestly could care less. What I do want is for a team to check in with each other regularly so they stay on track, so they keep their eye on the ball, so that if there is any small problems, they don't graduate to being big problems. If it's every day, every other day, standing up, sitting down, 15 minutes, an hour, doesn't matter. It seriously doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in software either.
Mm. And so you tend to make a more principle-based focus on transformation?
Yes.
What does that really look like for you?
It looks like having the conversation early and often about how we want to be and how we want to operate. So, for instance, if one of our principles is collaboration, we want to weave collaboration into our conversations, right? So how we execute on a regular basis. Like, for instance, we just finished a story. Did we actually collaborate in that one?
Mm.
If we did, is that helpful? What are we learning from that? Or feedback. How do we seek feedback? What kind of feedback do we seek? When do we even bother doing that? So having a demo meeting every 2 weeks for half my clients is actually not a useful way to spend time.
Yeah.
But seeking feedback frequently and mostly asking, is this kind of going towards the desired outcome? And are the assumptions we're making still valid? And what do you think of this versus that? Or what other options can we have here? That is useful. So that is the type of conversations I want people having.
And those deep questions based upon, are we living these principles?
Yeah.
Do you tend to ask them more ad hoc? Or is it more of a continuous improvement activity that you try and do?
So that depends on my involvement. I'm external, mm-hmm. right? So I have my own company. I come in and I will be there on a certain frequency. So I don't normally work with the client on a daily basis. This is what I did 10 years ago. I don't anymore. And so my check-in with them will be more structured.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be being involved in like the bookends of sprints, right? So here's a retrospective. How did we approach things this time? If I am involved more frequently, then it might be more ad hoc. So I'm fond of finding teachable moments.
Yeah.
Every now and then I will run activities, but that is actually less common because I find that, you know, past the like the honeymoon period with an agile coach is what, 2 days. So after that, people need to get on with the work.
Yep.
So I want to kind of catch them doing the work and using that as an opportunity. So if I see somebody, like in software, it happens all the time. I see somebody working on something and their head's down and whatever. And I'll sit down and chat with them and whatever. And turns out they're 3 days into something that they had said would take them 2 days. Okay, well, what's going on here? What's, again, assumptions, principles. One principle people usually abide by is if I sign up, is I'm going to finish it, which is not collaborative. So maybe I can do something about that.
So the principles, I mean, obviously we've got the 12 principles in the manifesto.
We've come away since.
But is that a starting point for the conversation, or do you actually talk with the team and get them to come up with those principles so that they can own those?
Or do you have your special list?
Yeah.
Well, I do have a list because, well, the manifesto is 18 years old and we've learned a thing or two. And it's not to say that it's wrong, but it is partial. And it is software heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at my book, The Agile Mindset, I have generalized things, and now I'm giving them a somewhat different treatment as well. Yes, I want teams to come up with their own principles. However, principles are never actually the main thing. The main thing are the values and beliefs. That's the root of all agility or all ways of working. And so if the team is really committed to, let's say, the agile values, then the principles kind of fall out of that. So I'm not going to get on their case with anything, but they should act congruently. So if they are into adaptation and frequent value delivery and blah, 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 then presumably collaboration and simplicity and deferring decisions and all of those things kind of come along for the ride.
Mm.
What I find again and again is if everybody on the team, including managers and stakeholders, are aligned on the set of values and on the narrative, like the assumptions that we make, everything falls into place. They don't need a framework. They don't need to be told how to do work. It's just everybody aligns to that, period. And that's where leadership comes in, because leadership keeps those values alive. So
hopefully.
Done well. Yeah. You know what? Done well, but the biggest thing as far as I'm concerned with leadership is that it's intentional. Because with a lot of the clients I visit, the culture is accidental. It is not intentional. And so if you have leaders who are saying, look, here's how we want to be, then you will have consistency. And if they keep it alive, it needs very, it doesn't need a lot of maintenance. I was telling somebody just yesterday, like in one of my courses, we go over the profile of servant leaders. There's a lot there. It's a big checklist. I don't know anybody who's fully that.
Yeah.
But you don't need to be fully that. As long as you are congruent and honest and intentional and, you know, welcoming, inclusive, things like that, it's not about, you know, do you actually check every little box?
Yeah. I was going to be one of my questions. I would imagine there's a limit to how many principles people should be considering as being applicable for them.
Yes, there is. And look, so in the Mindset book, I listed 26 Agile principles.
Possible.
Common. So the treatment I gave it is, what are the principles that I believe the Agile community has consensus around? Right? I mean, you ask 10 people, you get 20 answers. But generally, the list I have there, I think most of the people here, we have 2,500, would say, yeah, that I recognize that as Agile. The manifesto had 12. They're not actually all principles. Some are beliefs.
No.
Never mind.
And some of them are double ups, too.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's multiple in the same one.
Yeah.
And two are clearly beliefs and not principles, whatever. But we've added to the list since then. We've added safety. Mm. We've added servant leadership. We've added deferred decisions to last responsible moment. We've added more. Can people actually recall all 26 upon asking? No. Even I can't.
Mm.
Right? But I know it when I see it. When I think, okay, so I have a choice to make here. How should I act? It does become second nature because of the values, and the values are a short list. The values are 3 or 4.
Right.
I want to be adaptive. I want to be collaborative. I'm assuming I don't have all the answers up front. Therefore, how should I act?
Yeah.
And that's that.
Of your 26, just a quick question. Because the one that's bugged me the most that hasn't been in the 12 in the manifesto is transparency. Is that in your list?
It is on my list.
Yay!
Yes, it is on my list. And that one's a tricky one when you think about non-software applications of Agile. Because in software, we really have nothing to hide.
Mm-hmm.
In finance, we do. In HR, we do.
Yes, that is true. Yep.
And so, while transparency is great and it has lots of benefits, for them it also has downsides.
How have you handled transparency in HR?
Well, you maximize where you can.
Mm.
And what isn't, you basically take on faith that the person doing the confidential thing is being, you know, forthright about it.
I've sometimes obfuscated the information. So code names and that sort of thing has helped.
Yeah.
So this whole idea of Agile out of software isn't new. I remember speaking about it at the Agile 2010 conference, for example, much very earlier version of this. But a lot of those early adaptations were really us taking what we had learnt in software and often taking a lot of the methods and principles and practices and trying to apply them. Now we're sitting here in 2019, what's the difference when we talk about Agile outside of software?
What's the difference? Look, I've been in the Agile community for more than 15 years now. I remember very little treatment of non-software uses other than saying, hey, it applies. Up to about 3-4 years ago. So there has been interest, but very, very little. It's like you say, well, technically Agile started in like 96, but seriously, who paid attention at the time, right? Okay.
So you're saying I was before my time, that's what you're saying, Renee.
we are before our time.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. What has changed is that we have learned a ton more, and so we know some things to avoid and some things to do. So, for instance, the way I talk about Agile these days and, you know, how I've defined mindset and so on, I personally did not speak like this a few years prior, and it has helped clarify, and this is what I've been speaking about for several years now, it's helped clarify really how much those practices don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And when you leave the cocoon of software development teams, that you shouldn't even look for equivalents. It's like people are saying, okay, so you guys do automated testing. What should we do? Mm-hmm. It's like we're looking for an equivalent. No. Or it's like, should we do a daily stand-up or not? The questions are focused on the wrong things.
Yeah. Is removing waste or automating one of the principles?
Actually, it is not. So automating in general gives you feedback and it gives you safety and introduces cost of change.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminating waste is technically not in Agile. It's a borrow from Lean, and it makes perfect sense. And Agile will be pretty emphatic about don't do that unless you have set up for effectiveness, right? Mm-hmm. So you know you're painting the right wall, now paint it faster, okay? So we've borrowed a ton, right? Kanban, which is not Agile, has, look at Kanban teams, they copy a ton from Agile because it is congruent with what they do. So there's, in the last 10 years, the space has grown so much. Look how many scaling frameworks you have, and everybody has each other's throats.
Mm.
And, you know, team level, there's this, there's that, and the other thing. But I think we have more clarity now, and this is really part of my personal mission, on how to discuss Agile without being beholden to one guy's opinion. And like, it has to look like this. And if it doesn't, you're doing something wrong.
It's almost going back to the real intent behind it in some respects. Yeah.
Yes. So think about it this way. If you look at the manifesto, it talks about, again, values, beliefs, and principles. It doesn't tell you how to do any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yet somehow, 2019, everybody is obsessed with the how, and everybody's got the right answer.
Mm.
Look how long it took for the Scrum Guide to not tell you how to do a daily stand-up. Now they just tell you to have one, but they don't actually say, oh, it's the three questions. 10 years ago, I wrote about why the three questions are harmful to teamwork. I'm really glad that one went out. But if you look at Lean did not have the same fate. Lean, forever, not forever, like it's always been about principles. So Lean will tell you, eliminate waste. It doesn't tell you, thou shalt do a value stream map and look at here and there, and here's exactly what you should be doing. It's about principles. That's what's called Lean thinking, which I think explains why Lean took a lot, like it really it took hold a lot better than Agile ever has. Because I think Agile got sucked into the implementation, and the spirit was kind of lost along the way. If you look at the state of Agile implementations, that's exactly what you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are far fewer that are in spirit than they are in, like, it's mechanical. It's totally mechanical.
It's even gotten, I'd say, worse as it's moved away from just processes and practices and moved to squads and chapters.
Yeah. Well, we'll have better teamwork if we just call them squads or pods, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they're magical, regardless of the fact that they're all Avengers, right?
Yeah, they are. That's so right? True.
Every client I have, I come in, the team's called Avengers. Imagine that. Okay.
I wonder, we're sitting around this table where, 15 plus year veterans on this, and I was trying to keep you out of that.
Thank you.
Out of that list, but we are. We've been around for a long time. You see these things go through ebbs and flows, and in the early days when we were doing this, we had to come up with these practices to make sense of those principles. Unfortunately, what's happened is the people then came behind us and saw them.
Yeah.
Only saw the practices.
Totally.
And so I think we're in this natural state now of having crossed the chasm, that it's logical that whilst we were always talking about principles ideally in all our conversations, mm-hmm. that we now have to lead the fight to push people back to what that was originally.
I love it. I think it's really awesome that you wrote this. And it is certainly, I've heard more and more organisations moving towards a principle-only based transformation. Mm. There's not a lot of exemplars at scale, I would say.
Yes.
But there's a few people who are working on that. I mean, what's your experience been to that degree?
Look, I do work with large organizations, but that's not my sweet spot.
Mm.
I like to work with a mid-size or smaller. If we can't make this work, how can we make the big work?
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
And even at midsize, there's so many challenges to making this work. But what I often see is that the people who grow up in the ranks of the midsize company, then, you know, they have greater influence and whatever. As they progress in their careers, they go and they help the bigger companies. So now, if you look around, companies are doing on their agile journey not just with professional coaches, but with a bunch of people on staff who cut their teeth on agile elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely have more experience. However, that experience often comes with really skewed implementations of or understandings of what agile is really. And so, you said we've crossed the chasm. I'm actually not so sure about that.
Well, cross the chasm in the amount of people doing it, not in the quality of the...
Fair enough.
Or consistency of outcome, especially.
Yeah, fair enough.
So we talk about the late adopters and things. It's now not about whether you're doing Agile or not. It's now about how well or how many times you've had it.
But I would also say we've probably crossed the chasm at the team level of Agile.
I think
I agree with you.
I'm not even sure at team level, to be honest with you, particularly.
But we've experimented enough to know what can work.
But it still doesn't hold.
Mm. Okay, so some
what,
shift.
Because of people, individuals' interactions, you think?
Something like that.
Look, some shift I'm seeing is that companies that a few years ago would have paid for solid team coaching don't do that anymore, because for them team coaching is now a commodity. So we've crossed that chasm.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
Which is good and bad. On one hand, at least you're paying to have a coach. On the other hand, you're paying the coach so little, so nobody actually listens to the coach.
Or the coach has no experience.
Or has no experience. Yeah. Or got in through a recruiter, mm-hmm. not because somebody actually knew what coaches do.
Yeah.
So, there's that problem. So
we'll get there in a moment. Keep going.
Okay. So in a way, look, getting Agile right to the team level, I think it is technically a solved problem that has serious execution problems in the wild.
Yeah. Mm.
But if I'm right and companies agree with that, then they're going to leave the execution at the level it is and try to scale up something that is not quite solid yet.
Yeah.
So they don't do the nail it before you scale it. So... yes, you will have trouble with that.
But so we're not going to fix business agility or go to Teal tomorrow? Is that what you're saying?
Teal, yeah. I don't think we're going to Teal ever, but never mind. No, but here's something else. And one reason I'm writing my new book now is that...
what's the new book on?
Non-software Agile, right?
I thought that's what the principal one's on.
No, that's the Agile Mindset.
Well, hold on. Because let's get through this. Let's get the list out
so
for everyone.
The one that you had in the podcast long ago was The Human Side of Agile. This came 3 years after.
The Agile Mindset, Making Agile Processes Work.
Yes. So that explains Agile without saying Scrum, or practices, or best.
Yep.
Okay. The new one, which will come out later this year, is How to Get Started, Grow and Sustain Agile in a Non-Software Part of the Organization.
Right.
Now, why am I doing that? Because the interest is there. The demand starts to appear. Everybody wants business agility and organizational transformations, but nobody actually talks about what happens to anybody who does not do software, because that's where all the attention goes. That's where all the literature is. So it's great to talk about business agility, but what do we do with the hundreds of people who do, again, the support, the business units, and so on? Nobody has anything for them. We have Scrum pretending to be universal, and we have Kanban, which is great. But to go beyond limiting WIPs and visualizing stuff, you actually really have to understand it.
Mm.
It is a lot more complicated than it looks. So what can they do? So my work now, and that's the talk I gave today, is how to make it possible for mere mortals, not certified people and management professionals and such, to devise ways of working that are agile-minded or totally agile, that can make a difference to them.
And so what do you see as the difference between the agile mindset versus applying agile in business? Like, because I would imagine there's a huge crossover.
Well, look, they're fundamentally the same thing. This book simply describes what it's like to make choices in an agile way. Okay, but this book, the purple one, it will not tell you how to get started. Okay, it describes it without saying agile means standing up for 15 minutes every day.
Yeah, so okay. It describes the why or the intent.
It describes the choice-making that is agile and why we do it this way or not. And
it describes how you would know if you have agility.
Exactly.
Right.
It describes agility, particularly the agility that we associate with the Agile Manifesto because, and generalize beyond software, but it doesn't tell you how to put it in place.
Yeah.
It doesn't do that. That was not my intent.
Yeah.
So, again, what I'm doing with the new book is giving people actually less of the description of Agile and more of, so how do you get there? So let's say you're a finance team, right?
Is it more facilitation? It's not really facilitation tips, or is it?
No, it's a structure, set of conversations and steps to take to get to a good solid point. So, for instance, guidance on where to apply it first. How would you know? So I'm not telling people how to do that, but what sort of questions you need to ask yourself.
Considerations.
Or even measures.
Another one is, if you, the manager, bring this to your team, chances are people are going to freak out. What sort of things can you expect? And what could you say when people raise their concerns? How would you design a workflow? So I have guidance in terms of how would you design the workflow for your work? You know your work. And without jargon, without talking about batch size, which
value
nobody
stream
understands.
Mapping.
I know,
that
jargon that doesn't compute outside of these walls.
Yeah.
What sort of team touch points you should have? And if you find daily stand-ups useful, use them. And if you don't, you don't. So that's the point there. So I don't have a book for how do you get started agile and software because everybody starts out anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when I meet them, they're already into it.
That's what the Scrum Guide's for, isn't it? Well, don't hit me.
Okay.
Evil eyes came my way.
Should have stopped training.
So I'm curious.
Mm.
There's all these possible futures of agile due to the commoditization and the state that we're in right now. You know, what do you think are the possible futures of agile, the good and the bad side?
Look, I imagine that 5-10 years from now, it will, okay, every software and IT organization will have it. Functions outside of that, maybe. 10 years from now, more. In most places, it will be some mashup of stuff we used to do and stuff that kind of seems to make sense to us and stuff somebody picked up from the previous company and kind of make it work. And it won't be great.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be generally
unless
mediocre.
They read your books, of course.
That's a given. No. It's, seriously, this is a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you cannot create magic just by saying 7 plus minus 2 with product owner. Like, no, you actually have to put some serious hard thought into this all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's interesting because. There used to be the joke around the coach's answer is always, it depends.
Yeah, because it does actually depend.
Because it does.
I mean, it's a cop-out, but it does
but
depend.
But I don't feel like it's said as much anymore in this day and age of prescriptive agile.
Look at the word ceremonies. I should slap some people over that one. The Scrum Guide never said that. Scrum Guide talks about events.
Mm.
Where did we get ceremonies from?
Religion, isn't it?
I don't know. Or rituals. Rituals is even more.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was religious. Anyway.
I think it was in one of the books. I think.
Maybe.
From memory.
Maybe, but like, people who don't know much about this, they hear about those agile ceremonies and say, oh, okay, I suppose I got to do them, right?
Mm.
Whereas if you talked about agile events, again, like the Scrum Guide does, well, no. I mean, Scrum says you should do these because they work, but not because the elders told you, right? Not because this is the tradition and bequeathed to us from, you know, our ancestry. No. But when you say ceremonies, people show up and kind of expect to go through the motions.
Mm. I don't think calling an event would change it that, though. I think behaviorally people just go, oh, it's just... It's the same thing, just called it something different.
See, I don't know about that, because words have...
they have meaning.
They have meaning, but they also have baggage. So, for instance, in my new book, I don't say process, I say workflow.
Mm-hmm.
Because process kind of gets people's backs up.
Mm.
And I've been places where they told me, process means I do my work and I send it in for approval.
Right.
This is not the interpretation I have for process, right? Yeah. This is not the interpretation most of the attendees here have either. Workflow seems to be a bit more neutral. Look at the word velocity. What an awful choice. Right? Better, cheaper, faster. No, it's not. That's not what it's designed for. But you use words such as sprint and velocity, and everybody's so nimble and fast and whatever, but Agile's not for fast.
Yeah, Agile's a marathon.
So what's your reword for user story then? That's the one that often comes up when you've got, I find, when you've got non-software people in the room, because a user story, sometimes, a lot of the time, if you're in a finance department, they're not on a customer journey, they've just got jobs to be done.
Yeah, so as far as I'm concerned, it's an item, it's a work item, a task, a, yeah.
Yeah, I call it work items.
I call work items.
Yeah. Again, Scrum calls them backlog items.
Mm.
Stories are one particular way. And even then, there is what a story is supposed to do, and there's a story template. Template gets in the way, right? I get my clients off the template because it when they use the template, they turn their brains off. I don't want that effect.
Well, that's interesting. I sometimes have to do the other thing to actually get them to turn their brains on.
Mm. Yeah, I have more of that problem.
Yeah.
Okay, say more.
Because they don't think about who this is really for and what's the real outcome. When is it successful?
Trying to solve. It's just a...
Okay, so in this conference, every year somebody will talk about checklists and bring up the checklist manifesto and say, okay, so what I do is I tell people, all right, at least think who, what, why. I don't care how you write them.
Mm.
They don't have to be in a sequence. Don't do the mental, linguistic gymnastics to make everything look like a sentence, even though it's run on and has 50 words. Just make sure you have this someplace in there so we know who it's for, blah, blah, blah. That's the thing.
Problem is that those organizations are the ones that will turn that checklist into a template again and probably complicate. But
yeah.
Yeah, but we get the idea.
Yeah.
I guess my question about when you start to now bring this into non-software, at the end of the day, whatever company it is, whether we're talking about a bank or a software company, we've got the customer in mind, right? Mm-hmm. so we're taking the problem, and obviously to get a problem from not done to done, or an opportunity, it does have to pass through all these areas. I do have to get money. I might have to hire staff. I might have to do those other things. So, because the software side of the world will still be doing Agile, perhaps as we know it, or perhaps in a better way, and now you've got this non-software side. What is the common denominator? Is it those principles, because those principles are the same that brings those together?
Yes. And you know, again, something that the Agile community does a lot is always quote those same, textbook cases like Southwest Airlines or whatever. Like, if you drill into people, the customer happiness comes first. And you also hire for value fit. You don't just force people to think that if they don't already, right? But you hire people who do actually care about the customer and not just checking the box. Then you will have that effect.
So is one of the challenges starting to get those the operational areas like real estate, finance, to start thinking about customer as opposed to thinking about what's best for the business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so take, for instance, finance, right? So finance has to do some things for the customer being the government. Okay, fine, you got to do this. You got to stay in business. But a lot of the work that finance does is inside the building, right? So, for instance, they produce, I don't know, monthly or quarterly reports.
Mm-hmm. Forecasts, yep.
Yeah, okay. So now you can say, well, the agile thinking will guide you to actually talk to your consumers of those reports and say, what do you need? You don't need the report. You need some questions answered, such as, am I terribly overspent? Or what do I need to worry about? Or what's my chance of having some spare money to hire a consultant, whatever it is? The deliverable that will satisfy these outcomes may not be a report. It may actually be a conversation.
Mm.
And that is one form of eliminating waste, but it also helps your customer get better results. Right, so it's not the same product with less work. It could be a different product with less work.
Yeah, because you'll get a richness in conversation there, where you'll get a lot more insight.
Yeah.
So one of the other criticisms has been as we, the Agile community, have started to wind out of software into the wider area, is that we're stepping into areas that we don't have that expertise in. That that we are essentially software people now coming and telling the financial people or the legal people what to do. How do you deal with that perception when you come into these organizations?
It is hard. It is hard because, people do have perceptions and they do pigeonhole others. What can I tell you? I mean, it definitely helps that I've written something like this, and it's not specifically about software, but yes, there is an attribution for sure. And say, okay, so what do you know about us? Well, I may not know a whole lot about you, but if you gave me 30 minutes, I could ask you some questions that will make a difference to you, and usually that works.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Look, in a lot of my companies, I get to talk to the CEO. Okay, so yes, I'm the CEO of my own company, but that doesn't count. It's too small.
Yeah.
Whereas if I talk to the CEO of a retailer or the CIO of a retailer, I don't have the reference of experience of having been that. Okay. But I do have a reference experience and I do have the field expertise from what the tensions are and what the realities are for somebody who is accountable for the results of hundreds and thousands of people. So I know how to talk about that in a way that can help you improve your outcomes and maybe expand your field of vision. I'm not going to tell you do X differently. That's not my thing, right? So they might call me the consultant, but I come in as a coach, okay? And I try not to be called a Scrum coach, but more of Agile coach, or sometimes just mindset coach.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still get that a bit? People calling you a Scrum coach?
A little bit.
Right.
But then they talk to me, they realize that I don't really do much of Scrum. So, it, yeah.
I like the term mindset coach, actually. That's
that's in my signature, even. Mm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've always referred to myself as a delivery coach as opposed to an Agile coach. Because I help, particularly when I was team-based, because I was helping teams deliver and even helping organizations deliver.
Yeah, and also, like, if you look up on my website, the courses I teach, they're mindset training. So I train people in Agile without using Scrum. I have a course called Pragmatic Scrum. It's technically like what they would do in CSM, but changed so much to make it pragmatic and not beholden to anybody's ideas. So that's my thing, because if you don't think differently, doing differently won't matter.
So what else are you working on or passionate about right now?
This is what's occupying my attention this year.
I'm amazed you have time to write 3 books.
Well, I don't do...
2.5, but you know what I mean.
Well, it's 3-4 years between each, right? This is my 3rd kid, so...
So how many more children are in you then?
Yeah.
Look, I thought I was done after 2, honestly. After the second one... Actually, after this one... There was a huge uptick in business because people wanted that. They didn't want more of the frameworks.
Yeah.
So I figured, okay, that's interesting. I didn't think I would have the time for a 3rd one. And then after I got enough inquiries from clients saying, okay, we are in student housing and we're in corporate real estate and can you help us? And I'm thinking, yeah, I can. It's not going to look the same as for the other guy, but I can. So more people need this kind of thing. So that's how third kid. Right now, I'm not seeing a fourth kid, but who knows, right?
Yeah, it's another couple of years away anyway.
I know. And then maybe a couple of years away, I'll listen to this podcast and say, well, little did he know.
Right? I can't wait for it. I really can't.
I guess we come back to the first book, so
the human side of Agile.
We came to know you through that, and even down in our part of the world, that was it's a book that's known and is widely revered, I guess, from the community.
Nice.
Did that surprise you, the success of that? I mean, obviously there was a passion in that, but
look, I can tell you this: for an Agile book, its sales have been average. They have not been stellar, but they've not been poor either. It's done well. Which tells me that the readership cares about it.
Mm.
It's not like, you know, it's one of those Scrum books that everybody buys and has on the shelf. And I have gotten... I
don't know which books you're referring to now, but anyway.
Never mind.
I think we know.
I have received so much positive feedback about it, but from people who I can tell actually paid attention to the message.
Yeah.
Look, individuals and attractions are the first line in the manifesto, and it is the least practiced part of the manifesto ever.
Second line.
Yeah.
We're uncovering better ways of working.
Okay, don't even go there.
the third line, I think, with the top. No.
Whatever. No, but out of the four comparisons of values, that one clearly has not caught on.
Yeah.
So I am not surprised that it hasn't received greater readership, because in a way it's a niche.
Mm.
It should not be, but it kind of is.
Well, it's certainly a book that I recommend as the top two books for people to read who are new as Scrum Masters, because I really love to reinforce.
The Scrum Guide, is it?
Yeah, sure. no, actually, I recommend reading Coaching Agile Teams. But from a Scrum Master perspective, because I really want to emphasize it's not just about process and ceremonies and rituals or whatever else, but there is, you know, this is a double-sided coin where you do need to think about the human element.
For a long time, there were several Scrum trainers who would buy it from me by the box load to hand out to their students.
Lovely.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the community that book has hit. It should be and could be
a broader than just Scrum Masters,
but it has seemed to have resonated in that coach Scrum Master community. Well, in the good part of the. if I think about all the people that, where I see that book, I mean, it's well read. Anyone you talk to who's read it, talks glowingly about it, as opposed to plenty of other books where it's like, oh yeah, I bought that and haven't read it. Or,
well, I think the thing for me was it was similar to Lisa Atkins' book. It's sort of like every page, every chapter is like, yeah, that's totally right.
Mm.
That's exactly how I would have worded it.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, so that's good.
It's a good job.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do it.
So then, I mean, the mindset one, which I guess we weren't as familiar with, now I see it, I go, oh, yeah, the purple book.
It's my purple kid.
Has that one, how's that done in comparison? And is there a need, or do they complement each other if you read the first one?
Well, this one came later, but in a way, this one's the prequel.
Mm-hmm.
It has definitely sold more, that's one thing. But I can tell you that what's happening with this one is several, I would even say many, companies have bought it by the box load to kickstart their Agile transformation. So it's the kind of book that transformation leaders would strategically leave on somebody's desk. Like a CTO or whatever.
Oh, I see.
I think the name of that book has really helped you, because obviously that whole movement of Agile as a mindset, I think it's come at the right time.
It came out a few months before the big talk started, yes. And by the way, that one came out of following online discussions where people would ask, like on LinkedIn, it used to be the user groups before that, people would ask, okay, I need some help here. I'm doing everything by the book, but the results are not there. And people then answer, oh, clearly you're not operating with an agile mindset. And then nobody would proceed to describe what that actually is. And the most helpful thing people will do is, oh, go read the manifesto. Well, okay, that thing is kind of short. It is not operational. So now what do I do? And I looked around, and I'm talking about 2014 when I started writing it, came out a year later. I looked around, and I could not find a single book that actually explained the agile thought process. It would usually be something like, you know, maybe a half chapter here or a mention there or whatever, but everything would immediately go to, and this is how you execute. So I had to do something about it.
So if Tony was here, he would definitely be asking this question, so I ask on behalf of Tony. How do you see it being different from movements like the Heart of Agile, which is trying to go back to the basics?
I'm actually not familiar with it.
So the Heart of Agile is Alistair Coburn's, now I'm challenging
it's,
Tony.
It's four quadrants with a little love heart in the centre.
Yeah, and...
it has reflect, improve, collaborate.
Deliver.
Yes, good. High five for
High five for us.
Okay, sounds like a set of four values. Modern Agile has a set of four values. They're all congruent. I have a client. Their set of values is collaborate, learn, improve. They don't talk about value delivery. It's sort of implied. But the big deal is we should be learning and collaborating and improving. That's a big deal. So we don't always have to use the same terms as the manifesto. But if we say, yeah, these two sets, they're worded differently, but they really stand for the same fundamental thing, then we're fine. Look, when I do like values analysis with my clients, we won't normally come out with the same terms as there or even necessarily the same terms as in here, but it doesn't matter. It's when we get things that are markedly different, such as we value predictability. We value standardization. Maybe I should standardize Agile across my teams, right? So that's a form of it. So when you have that, you can tell that what you're going to have is not quite Agile, or not at all.
So is the problem then, just building on from that, If you want to sort of say why people always come back to the manifesto, is that, you know, for whatever reason it became that, you know, I mean, it's where the word came from, you know, essentially with that first mention of
we that. Don't have a constitution. It's the one thing we have that comes close to it.
Exactly. There's been so we talk about modern Agile and Heart of Agile as having the values. One of the things we don't have is a consistent level of principles, like we talked about before. That
That's what I tried to capture.
The manifesto didn't have, as you said before, didn't have some of those extra things like transparency or that. So, how do we take the things that you have there? Like, if people haven't heard of this book, and now more people have, obviously, by listening to this.
Or three other extra people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an agile estimate, right?
Yeah. But you know, how do we start to make those principles more cross-cutting across the community?
Look, even if we were to document this somehow, let's say we came up with a document and we call it the new Agile Manifesto.
Oh, immediately. 2.0.
Yes. Or the Agile Manifesto as we understand it now. Immediately, you would have people jumping up and saying,
that's
no,
not right.
That's
yeah,
not
totally.
Right. What about this and that? Or, yeah, I can see that, but it depends.
What you didn't do? You didn't get 21 men into a jacuzzi and get this agreed to.
Sure, we're never going to write the Agile Manifesto.
Resort, right?
We're never going to write the Agile Manifesto 2.0, but somehow even modern Agile and Heart of Agile, to a lesser extent, have also seemed to have resonated in one way or another. I think it's because of their simplicity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're not a big, fat, safe diagram or a misunderstood less diagram, or because they're not a framework. So that's sort of where I'm getting is, do we have to have something that... it doesn't really matter where it came from. That actually just is nothing but the principles explained to be simpler.
I mean, it could just be as simple as the oath of non-allegiance, whereby it's there. Your principles are there, and people just sign up to it as a movement.
I am personally not interested in movements.
I can tell from your reaction.
No, because look, actually reminds me of something I wrote in the introduction here, that Agile has been a movement. And you know what happens with movements. You got your converts, you got your heretics, you got your followers, and you got your victims as well.
Yeah, it's true.
And you got your powers, and it's not great.
I think there's a lot of victims, actually.
There's a ton of victims. Yeah. Casualties all over. And it's, you know, here's how we do things from now on. And like, So the way I look at it, every organization that's interested, they will start someplace, maybe the whole organization, usually less, and they should say, how do we want to be? That's what I talked about today. How do we want to be? So we decide to follow these three, four values.
What matters to us.
Matters to us. And it may coincide with what I wrote here. It may coincide with Heart of Agile. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. As long as it is a set of values that we have chosen, they're not inflicted on us, we have chosen because we think that that is how we will be the most successful. Okay. Having done that and articulated beliefs and such, because that's part of mindset, which principles do we choose to follow? For instance, safety, transparency. Don't commit prematurely. That's the deferred decisions. Simplicity, trust. That's how we want to work. And you implement that, and it's going to take you a while, and there's going to be the secure change curve, and there's going to be a whole bunch of turmoil along the way, because that's how change is. And eventually we'll get there, and then we'll iterate once more. In one organization, it will look like this, and in another, it will look like that. And that's perfectly fine. I don't need organizations to conform to a movement. And if they like to use the Agile moniker, that's fine. And if they don't, who cares?
Let me ask my question in another way to sort of wrap this whole topic up. How do we, and I guess I'm talking about the three of us as a starting point here in this, and our listeners now, how do we get the community getting back to basics? How do we get the community getting back to mindset? How do we get the community get to talking about values and principles?
Look, what I have chosen to do is to speak and write and to cultivate leaders among my clients. I hope that's a winning strategy. I hope more people do it. I see evidence of that. I mean, there's books now about enterprise agility that don't say safe. Imagine the heresy, right? So I think it's happening. Is it enough? I don't know. I don't know. And look, there's always going to be the pull of business. And businesses that sell solutions in search of problems will thrive. The other thing that will happen is that all of the stuff that we kind of hold important in the Agile community and really the individual's interactions and whatever, it will bump up against the reality of people need to make a living.
Yeah.
And so there's a limit to how far you can really go.
So you heard it first, no certifications.
Yes. Look, I'm not, you know, conceptually against certifications, but if they're valuable, that's fine. Long ago, I made the strategic decision not to play that game. Okay, I could have been very rich if I had chosen differently, but that's not what I'm doing this for. Will all of this be enough? I don't know. I don't know.
I guess just a call to action for people listening to this is, you know, if nothing else, go back and think about that. Are you coaching around values and principles? Are you coaching strictly around practices and obviously mindset as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and for a lot of people, it is so hard to disentangle themselves from the practices they know work. It's just really hard. And again, if we call them ceremonies and rituals, it's like, but we got to do them. I mean, people said so. And important people said so. So they ought to work. Look, what I take people through in terms of really designing methods that work for them, it's hard work. Most people would genuinely prefer not to do it. They just want to get on with their own work. Mm-hmm. And having an off-the-shelf solution would be a great thing. Well, yes, but then you don't get the results that you need. So there's always going to be that tension. It's like, okay, individuals and interactions, any relationship we have in our lives, requires cultivation. They don't come free, even family, right? You have to invest in that continuously. We do this because it's worth it. Same thing with how you operate as an organization. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for your time today. If people want to contact you or have training with you, what's mm-hmm. the best way for them to get in contact with you?
So on my site, which is 3pvantage.com, there's a contact me. Mm-hmm. There's the list of courses that I teach.
Twitter?
I barely use it anymore. There's LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it when people connect with me. I love it even more when they go through the website as opposed to the app, because then they can put in a note, and then I know that the request is not random.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a little tip.
Yes. Yeah, because when you connect with people on the LinkedIn app, it just sends the request out mm-hmm. and like, where's this person from? I don't know. But when they actually say something like, hey, I heard you on this podcast, like, yeah, awesome.
Right. Yeah. And the three books, the two books, sorry, and the third one coming. So the first two books, just for folks who are listening.
Yeah, so they're available on Amazon. We have audio for both now.
Ooh.
Anybody who buys them directly from me through the site, 3pvantage.com, I actually donate the money. So if we bypass the behemoth middleman, that money will go to charity.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But that applies only to digital, because I don't ship, right?
Mm.
But if you want to buy the print, sorry, it's just Amazon.
And the books are The Human Side of Agile and The Agile Mindset.
Yes.
Do you have a working title for the new book?
Yes. It's called Agile for Non-Software Teams. And the working subtitle, current to 1 hour ago, because I've been doing title testing here, is A Pragmatic Path to Making It Work for You.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. Nice. Two more people for my title testing. Good.
And if you want to contact myself or Craig, you can contact me at renee@theagilerevolution.com and Craig.
Craig@theagilerevolution.com. Any one thing left to say, I think, Renee?
Yep. Viva la revolution.
Oh, we've got to get the audience in there, don't we?
Sure.
So it's 1, 2, 3.
Viva la revolution.
Thank you.